Welcome to your next HR Wisdom resource. This is Ben Gagan from HR Wisdom, and today I'm joined by Jackie Alder, a consultant with extensive and diverse experience across human resources, change management, organisational development, and industrial relations. Jackie's experience has been gained across a variety of industry sectors, including resources, manufacturing, transport, government, and defence. Jackie has had significant achievements across a range of areas, with projects including organisational change, culture change, organisational redesign, systems implementation, workforce reform, and cost improvement. We've asked Jackie to share her expertise in different aspects of the difficult process of managing redundancies in the workplace. Let's get started. Could you perhaps describe a case study or an example, give us some information about the background and then what direction the business was going, and then how you managed the process, including how you chose people and how you communicated and how the process ended up?
I have an example from my own experience which relates to the manufacturing industry, an organisation of about 300 people, and the situation was economically we needed to change or not continue to be in business in the next couple of years. So that sort of circumstance, I suppose, always helps galvanise people's attention on what needs to be done. Process-wise, we started out very similarly to the steps I've previously outlined. We had a look from a managerial level at what we thought we needed in our business and why, and what that organisation would look like into the future. Because we did not want a voluntary redundancy, having previously had the experience of voluntary redundancies and had just recovered from a brain drain, that was somewhere we couldn't afford to go again, because if we lost that same level of skill this time, it would jeopardise our ability to actually continue to exist into the future. So there was a lot of incentive inside the business to get this right. The step that was different was that once we came to what we thought we needed for the future and how that might look, that was the stage at which we engaged employees, because if we want to get it right, we all know that the people who do the work know the most about what's required. So the process from there is we actually set this up as a selection process, or we called it a reverse selection process. We engaged with representatives from each of the departments in the site and refined the organisation design based on conversations with them about what we were thinking we would be doing, how things would be changing, and was that going to work. That was something that was time-consuming but of absolute enormous benefit. And by the time we got to the end of that process, we realised that we had potentially been on the path where we were going to make some decisions that we would have regretted down the track. What's an example of that? Not being a technician in the manufacturing process, I'll talk about it in general terms, but one example of that is that we had anticipated that we could make a particular process change in this way and it would operate with a particular bundle of skills. And had we gone down that path of that process change, we would have found ourselves with a specification problem that we hadn't anticipated. And given the nature of the product that we were manufacturing, that was actually quite critical, because it's we couldn't afford for the product to fail once it went to the customer. So we realised that we would actually introduce a technical deficiency in the process. So that was good to learn. And the surprising thing to learn, to realise, was the level of engagement from people in a circumstance where they weren't happy about the changes. There was definitely high emotion, but if you engage them in, well, this is how we think we are going and what we're in planning on doing, some don't, but many, initially reluctantly, do give you what's inside their heads to help you, because they can see the overall benefit perhaps for themselves. So that was, for me, an interesting lesson to learn, and it certainly wasn't all simple on beer and Skittles, but it certainly was an interesting lesson to learn. The process we went through from there was to actually involve some of the more experienced shop floor personnel and line management personnel, and these were people who had credibility with their peers, and develop, okay, well, we've got these roles, we think the organisation's going to look like that. We actually developed a behaviourally anchored rating scale. They didn't know that's what it was actually called, and we workshopped, okay, if we were going to, if you had someone on your team that you were happy to be doing that role and you would call them competent, what would that look like? And conversely, what would someone who's below acceptable competence look like? What would someone who's excellent look like? And in combination with a traditional selection process, we anchored our selection process around, so interview process around those things where there were new roles, and we combined that with a supervisor and peer assessment of people against that particular scale. So it was an in combination, it wasn't just supervisors, it was supervisor, peer assessment, interview process, and that's how we sorted the people who had the skills and the application and applied those skills in the workforce with the right and the right behaviours from those who weren't.
So to clarify on that, two questions. One is, when you determined either the behaviours or the characteristics of people who did the roles very well, what exactly did that look like? Was it a list of things, or was it a discussion, or what did that look like? And secondly, how did you actually structure the peer assessment? In what way did you get that feedback?
Okay, how that looked like was we focused on, well, what were the key elements of the job. So someone who was competent, so we had what were the key technical elements of the job. They knew how to operate Express, they knew, and when they did that, they checked the material safety data sheets, they followed the bills of material, you know, they had their safety gear on, etc. What team behaviours did they display? So were those people, if their press, their machine was down, did they look for other work? Did they offer suggestions? Did they help train others? Some of those team behaviours as well. So it was how did they perform the role, and also what were some of the team behaviours, and you know, the documentation aspects of it well. So physically doing the job, documentation, safety, team behaviours. So it was a conversation about, okay, you think someone's competent, what do you actually see them doing? So we ended up with a one sentence description along a few dimensions, and that was the same dimensions for someone who was excellent and the same dimensions for what was less than acceptable or less than competent.
Yeah, that certainly sounds a lot more comprehensive and professional than some of the old GBI good bloke indexes that I've seen used in business. And secondly, they might add on a few extras like timekeeping, and that's about it. So that's certainly building in the technical competencies and the team behaviours and things like that, and rolling them in, do an overall assessment, seems a lot more comprehensive. What did you do with the information once you'd started to compile that?
You mean the information, the assessments themselves? Really, that was, well, we compiled anonymous peer assessments. We had to think about that. That's always fraught with a little bit of danger because people have a stake in that. But what we were selective about the people who were through the process were also the people who did the assessments on each other, and it was a supervisor assessment, and it was a behaviourally targeted interview. So those things weighted reasonably easy. So the decision process was as part of the what's the basic minimum in deciding someone was competent. These things were that you must have, and if those things weren't present, well, then that knocked a person out of the process, very much the way you go through any initial process in selecting anyone on CVs. And then it moved through to the next phase. The other thing we did, we'd done a lot of work in that particular business over a number of years around literacy and numeracy. And one of the focuses that had been recently in the business was on safety performance, because that had been poor. And we actually set a minimum benchmark of literacy because we were finding that people, we did have issues where people couldn't understand and follow safety instructions, standard operating procedures, material safety data sheets, etc. Whilst they may have had good behavioural work ethics, we were at a point in the business where we had to say, well, we don't have the luxury of continuing to develop those, so we need the workforce that's got that capability. And if we were selecting someone off the street, we were going through an external selection process, we'd be looking for the same things. So that was, you know, one of the critical things, and a difficult thing, but that people, in a way, almost self-selected because they knew where they stood at that. And they also knew that the organisation over a number of years had repeatedly offered support and assistance and training to those people who had those skill shortages.
So it was a very comprehensive process that you put in place. How did the process end up? What was the feedback, if you like?
The process was comprehensive, and it ran over about a 28-day period. So that's long, but it's not 1 month in the scheme of things. Wasn't long, and it was worth the investment. Throughout the process, we had union delegates, shop floor delegates from the various unions involved in interviews and the whole nine yards. We did have some industrial challenge from one of the technical areas that went through to the Industrial Relations Commission, and our process largely got through with some minor changes. But we did have one of the employee representatives actually stand up in front of a meeting with employees that was not a management meeting, this was a union meeting, and actually state that he had not seen such a fair process in his working life. And that was obviously a great benefit to us, and there was emotion and some disputation, but no lost time, and ultimately the decisions that were made stood, and the minor adjustments that were required by the Industrial Commission just made it an even more robust process for the future. And I happen to know that the person who was the general manager at that time has worked in different countries and different businesses since, and followed the essence of that process successfully more than once.
Brilliant. Well, that's an excellent outcome, and certainly worth the effort and putting in the planning and the proactive nature of it certainly paid off. So, excellent example. Thanks for joining us on today's HR Wisdom interview. Make sure you're on the mailing list so that we can let you know about further resources. Also, keep checking back to the HR Wisdom blog for the latest news, and you can find that at www.hrwisdom.com.au. Thanks again.